Thank you. So I'm Jenny. I work in the lab of Michelle Heck, who's sitting here on the second row, proudly taking a picture. And she's a USDA era scientist up in Ithaca, New York, affiliated with Cornell University. So excited to share some new research with you guys today. So as many of you know, there's a new virus being introduced to cotton in the U.S., only detected about a few years ago, maybe 2017 or so. This virus is called cotton leaf roll dwarf virus, or CLRDV for short. It's in the genus Polarovirus. So for the rest of my talk, I'm going to refer to viruses in this genus as Polaroviruses. But we're very curious to understand, what is this disease? How can we manage it? What is the potential impact to cotton production? So this virus, like other Polaroviruses, is transmitted by an aphid vector. So in order for transmission to occur, you need these three biological players to come together. So obviously our host is cotton. The virus, as I mentioned, is CLRDV. And the primary vector, as far as we know at this point, is the cotton aphid, or Aphis gossypii. So all of these three must come together for transmission. So our lab is relatively new to cotton. We just started working on it last September. So all of our previous work is actually on a closely related virus species that infects potato. So it's called potato leaf roll virus, or PLRV for short. The main crop host is potato, and the primary vector is the green peach aphid, or Mysis persici. So while the crop and the vector are very different from the CLRDV cotton system, the viruses themselves are actually quite similar, and we hope that a lot of these insights we've gained in our PLRV system can be rapidly translated to this emerging polarovirus in cotton. So these viruses are transmitted by aphids in a very particular mode. We call it circulative non-propagative transmission, which is a mouthful, but what it means is that the virus must circulate through the insect and must pass many different tissue barriers. But even during this entire process, the virus never infects the insect. It doesn't cause disease in the insect. So this transmission process begins in the phloem of infected plants. So these viruses are typically limited to the phloem, to the vascular tissue of their hosts. And as we know, aphids are sap suckers, so they feed on the phloem. And as they ingest the phloem sap, they also ingest virions. And then the virions must cross two important barriers in their insect vector. The first of those is the gut. So there are actually receptors on the aphid gut that specifically recognize these viruses, recognize the proteins of these virus capsids, and allow them to pass through those gut cells. Once it's crossed the gut, those virus particles are now in the hemocil, or the body cavity of the insect, where they rapidly diffuse and circulate until encountering the accessory salivary gland, where everything happens again, but in reverse. There are receptors that recognize the virus and allow it to cross those tissues. And the virus eventually ends up in the salivary duct, where it can be spit into the next host along with salivary secretions for feeding, thus completing the transmission process. And what's remarkable about these viruses, like I mentioned, they don't infect the insect, so all the information they need for this journey is contained within their coat. They never leave their coat during this entire passage. And so here's a cartoon of what we think these viruses look like. They have an icosahedral capsid shown here, and it's comprised of only two proteins. So the main protein is coat protein, which I've shown here in blue. But sometimes when the virus is making this protein, even though there's a stop coat on here, sometimes the ribosome keeps going. And it makes this longer protein shown here, which we call the read-through domain because it's generated by that ribosomal read-through. But I'm going to be calling it the spike protein for simplicity for the rest of my talk because this protein protrudes from the capsid surface like a spike. And we're particularly interested in this spike protein because particular regions of it have been found to be involved in aphid transmission. In fact, this protein is thought to be the one that facilitates that interaction with receptors in the aphid tissues. So we wanted to study more about this protein. We're particularly interested in what does this protein actually look like on the molecular level. So we collaborated and we focused on this region that was involved in transmission. So we collaborated with some crystallographers at Cornell, the PI's name is Josh Chappie, and one of his very talented graduate students, Carl, whose picture is up there. He was not only able to purify this protein to milligram quantities, he solved the atomic structure of this protein for us, which was quite remarkable. And so you can see here this beautiful ribbon diagram of what this protein looks like. And I'm not going to get into too many details about the structure, But I will say that, you know, this protein actually forms a dimer. So you see here two identical halves coming together to make a dimer. We can model how we think that dimer sits on the capsid. So remember, this is the protein that's protruding. It's the spike. So you can see here the protrusion, and down here is where, like, the sphere of the capsid would be. And we're particularly interested in this part up here shown in blue, the very tippy top of this protein, which has a lot of conserved pockets that we think may interact with AFID receptors. In fact, this cap domain is highly conserved across Polaro viruses that are transmitted by aphids, but it's not found in closely related viruses not transmitted by aphids. So this leads us to believe this piece of the protein may be very important for those interactions. And so this structure was very exciting. We generated a lot of hypotheses looking at it on the molecular level. One of our favorite ones is we're wondering, can this protein actually be used to block transmission? So if we hypothesize that the spike protein, so again shown here in orange, is the important protein that facilitates binding to those aphid receptors, what if you were to flood those receptors with just this protein, and then when virus came along later, it can no longer bind because they were already plugged up? So we wanted to test that hypothesis. So I developed a method to deliver this protein to aphids. So I used an artificial diet system. So what we do is we have a cup and we put the aphids in it, and we cover it with two layers of parafilm. And between those layers, we just have a sugar solution, which I added the protein to. So the aphids fed on this for a couple days, but then I needed to see, can they transmit virus? So I exposed them to a source of virus, in this case, infected leaves, and then I moved them onto healthy plants and gave them some time to inoculate those plants with virus. We removed the insects with a pesticide application and then waited a few weeks to see how many of these plants they inoculated actually became infected. So shown here are the data. On the x-axis, we have our treatments. So there was a no protein control, so this is just sugar solution, no proteins added. And we found that these aphids transmit around 20%. So 20% of the plants I inoculated became infected after this treatment. We also included another protein in our experiment, BSA, which has nothing to do with transmission, but we wanted to have another control in our experiment. And another group who studies these viruses in France actually found that when you feed aphids BSA, it increases transmission. And actually, they found if you fed them all sorts of proteins, random proteins, that increases their transmission, which we don't understand, but we wanted to make sure that we could recapitulate their results, which shows our assay is working. And also, you know, what does our protein do? Does it also increase transmission, as you would expect? But the answer is no, it does not. So when you feed them the spike protein, it actually significantly, drastically decreases the ability of these aphids to transmit virus, which is an even, you know, stronger result considering the normal effect of protein on transmission. So we were very excited that the spike protein seems to be an inhibitor of transmission. And we repeated the experiment a gazillion times, and we did a meta-analysis on it, where we found that on average it will reduce the chance of a plant becoming infected by 55%, with an efficacy ranging anywhere from 20% to 75% less of a chance of that plant being infected. So this is really exciting, really promising results. We also now have a nice assay that we can test, you know, different forms of the spike protein. So we think the spike is binding the receptors. What happens if we perturb the spike protein? Does it no longer bind to the receptors? What particular amino acids facilitate this binding? So using our structure, we developed several mutant forms of this protein and fed them to aphids. And I tried to do the exact same experiment. And what happened was actually, you know, kind of unexpected and initially frustrating, which is that my aphids died. So shown here is a graph of survivorship. So in my control treatments over here on the left, if I can find my mouse, oh, y'all can see it. In my no protein control, and again, that same BSA control, I had very little mortality. So very few aphids died. I had plenty of aphids for my experiment. But when I fed them to these mutant proteins, they all started dying, and I had anywhere from 70% mortality to all the way up to 99% mortality. So these mutant forms of the spike proteins were killing the aphids, which was bad for my experiments, but great for science, and great for controlling these insect vectors. So we're very excited to think that this protein can not only block transmission, but it can even kill the vector species. So this is very exciting, but this is obviously a very in vitro assay. You know, I'm just feeding purified protein to aphids. Maybe I could try to get this to move towards a system that would be easier to apply to the field. So an important proof of concept for me was to show that this protein could actually be produced by the plant, and if you deliver it to the aphids via the plant, it would still work. So I used a model host, Nicotiana benthmiana. I used Agrobacterium, and I infiltrated them and just expressed proteins in local tissue of this plant. And so, again, I have a no protein control. I have a GFP protein control, and then also my spike protein. And so I was very excited to see that my spike protein delivered in this manner can still block transmission of this virus and significantly decrease that transmission. So work on this is ongoing. So it's great that we found that we can express this protein in plants. And so we want to move forward on some more experiments. We want to get this protein into our crop host of interest, potato and cotton. And we want to see how it can affect the spread of virus on a field scale. Can it be a potential management strategy to help with these types of viruses? So we're working towards developing transgenics that are expressing this protein, like I said, cotton and potato. But we ideally would want a more rapid strategy to deliver to the field. So we're actually in the process of developing several non-transgenic approaches to get this protein into the crops faster. So with that, I'd like to thank my lab members, my funding sources, and a very important plug here, your name could be here. You could join our team. So if you're a PhD student nearing graduation, we actually have two postdoc positions open in our lab. So please come see me or Michelle or email us if you're interested in, you know, having fun with aphids and viruses with us. And with that, I'll take any questions. Yeah, that's a great question. So Cecilia is asking, do I have to give the spike before the aphids are exposed to virus? Does it work if they're exposed after? How long does it last? I haven't done those experiments yet. I've only pre-treated them with spike, so I don't really know. That, you know, there's a lot of parameters I want to tweak there, so I don't know. Yes, so his question is, are we planning to express the mutant forms of this protein? Absolutely. I'd like to express all the different forms, see what we get out of it. I would like to do that transient expression assay with the mutants as well, just proof of concept, take them through that pipeline. But yeah, it'd be great if we had something that could kill aphids and stop transmission. So we're definitely also, we have several different mutants, and if you could tell from the graph that some of them perform differently, some of them are more lethal than others. So kind of finding the most lethal forms and understanding that and optimizing that is something we want to do before we bring it into transgenics. That's a great question. So he's asking, what are our thoughts on why the mutants are causing mortality? This has been one of the most puzzling results we've had. And my thoughts on it are that these viruses are binding some receptor on the gut. The receptor isn't there just for the virus. The receptor has some endogenous function. It's important maybe for, you know, sensing nutrient status, or who knows what the endogenous function of that protein is. So both the virus and the aphid want the virus to bind that protein, that receptor, and then move on. The virus doesn't want to be trapped there. The aphid wants to recycle its receptors. So I actually think that potentially these mutants are actually binding those receptors too tightly, such that they can't be recycled and they can't perform their endogenous function, which is killing the insects. We think so. So he's saying that we think the differences between the mutations have to do with how they're binding that receptor. Absolutely. And that's why I think it's really important to figure out which different mutants behave in what manner and where are those amino acids on the RTD protein. Yeah.